Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. It is a proper football Friday. We're heading for Cowboys and Bears Sunday, 3:25 kickoff here on The Fan. We're live at Pickler Universe today, and the Tolos have been great. Everybody's loving the pickleball, and they're 24 courts. Just get up here on 35 and Bush if you want to play some pickleball. They have Stella Artois samples while they last if you're 21 and over. All right, it's time to chat with Jared Sandler here as the Rangers get set to host the Marlins. Three-game weekend series, Sands. How the heck are you?
What's up, guys? Hanging in there. Hope you guys are having a good time out there.
Are you a pickleball guy? I could imagine you getting after pretty good.
I hadn't played in a little over a year, but played the other day on the road trip. So I've played before. I enjoy it. It's a good time.
What's our focus here with the remaining games, beyond hoping for the miracle, of course?
Well, as far as like, you know, just trying to get in and win, I mean, they got to figure out a way to score more. You know, and that's kind of been the story of the season. You know, the pitching, I know, you know, it's not necessarily, it hasn't been lights out. I know Merrill Kelly struggled and, you know, it wasn't like the Rangers were losing games 3-2, 2-1 or whatnot, but they got to, you know, they got to figure out a way to score and maybe score early. You know, they gave up first inning runs to the Astros in all three of the games of that series. They, you know, they were playing from behind, and you know, hopefully they can maybe play from ahead and then let their bullpen work, because you know it is a really good bullpen coming off an off day yesterday. It's a pretty well rested group, so you know, yeah, it's the odds to get in the postseason are pretty slim, but you know they don't have the hardest schedule. We've talked about this several times before. It doesn't matter who's on your schedule. If you're playing well, you can win games. If you're not, then you know you're going to struggle. But you know, if they can maybe take the off day, mentally reset, and go on a run, I mean, may as well just play it out, see how it goes down. But you know, they're going to have to figure out a way to score runs, and you know, hopefully Corey Seager can come back sooner rather than later. I know he's, you know, he's working to try and, you know, get back and get his body in position, but you know, they got to figure out a way to do it without him for now.
It is exciting to get Tyler Mahle back. I mean, he was unbelievable prior to the injury. What's the plan for him tonight? I think it was like 70 pitches, what I heard. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, that sounds about right. You know, he went four innings, around 60 pitches, his most recent rehab start. It's just, you know, it's you know, good for Tyler, right? You know, he's dealt with injuries, and just to be able to work his way back after, like you said, Zach, such a great start to the season. He's a free agent to be. And so I think getting on the mound and just showing teams, hey, I'm healthy, you know, and making a start or two before the year ends will be beneficial for him. And, you know, hopefully he's able to take advantage of it this offseason. But, yeah, if the Rangers are to make a run, you know, having him use up some innings, pitch some innings, and just add to their pitching depth will certainly help. But, yeah, I think 70 pitches, four or five innings, I mean, if it's incredibly efficient, maybe you could see him get out there for a six, but I think the Rangers would be pumped if, you know, they got five innings out of him and, you know, were in a position to win when he left the game.
Do you think Mahle and even Merrill Kelly, both impending free agents, are going to be priorities to try and bring back?
You know, it's a great question, Zach. It's tough for me to answer without knowing, you know, financially what the Rangers are you know, willing to do or what financial flexibility they have. I mean, I think the Rangers would love to to bring back Merrill Kelly and Tyler Mahle if the price is right. I think that just generally speaking, the Rangers have a lot of decisions to make. I mean, we've talked all year about how the lineup hasn't produced at a level which, I guess they were expected to. But there are a lot of guys in this lineup who are under contract for next year, at least under team control. And so, my guess is just adding 1+1 there, second straight year, maybe the lineup hasn't produced, the way you wanted. You got a lot of guys who are under team control. There are going to be some changes made. And, not just the linear, hey, this guy's a free agent, he's not going to come back. I'm sure that, Chris Young and his team are going to work, very intently on trying to put together the right type of lineup. And so, they got a focus there. And then on the pitching side, they're going to have DeGrom and Eovaldi. They're going to have Leiter and Rocker. They're going to have Jacob Latz. But, you need more than five guys. Who are those sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth guys going to be? I think the Rangers have a lot of, and then this bullpen. I mean, it maybe has lacked the, I'm pooping my pants guy that comes in the ninth inning. But at the end of the day, I mean, look at the bullpen ERA. It's, near the top of Major League Baseball. We can have our grievances with the bullpen and, they haven't been perfect, but, that ERA is, it's not just like a make-believe number. And you've got a lot of guys who are on one-year deals or free agents to be there. So, the Rangers have a lot of decisions to make for this offseason. And I'm not sure how much money they have, and I'm not sure how they're going to allocate, those resources. But, I mean, we have seen that Chris Young has valued starting pitching, maybe even beyond what you would expect, right? Like, in terms of building more depth than what, you would think they would need to build. And it's led to having such a great rotation and pitching staff this year. And so it would be tough for me to just say, yeah, I mean, he's not going to have any interest in bringing back two really good pitchers. I just don't know what the game plan as a whole is going to be and how they're going to be able to divvy up those resources.
Jared, is there a chance that we've seen the last of DeGrom for the year?
Yeah, I guess that's definitely possible if, let's say they lose tonight and tomorrow and, it's just clear that they're out of it. There's a chance, or maybe he wants to make one more start. And, he's right now in line, I think, to make two more starts, one against the Twins and then, if needed, the final game of the season. So, if the Rangers aren't playing for anything in game 162, I would be shocked if he made that start. And as far as one more, I mean, I think he's certainly preparing for it. Hopefully, hoping that the Rangers are still playing meaningful baseball. But if it's clear they're out of it, I guess they'll give him that option and see either if he wants to make that start or maybe they let him make that start. But then he's not going to be pushed to six, seven innings, something like that.
Hey, Jared, how quick will we probably get a decision on Bruce Bochy and his situation going forward after the season?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bottas. I my guess is relatively quickly. I think Boch obviously doesn't want to rush in anything. And I mean, what this is like. You come off a season, whether it's a euphoric ending or a disappointing ending or anything in between, there's a lot of emotions and you probably need to separate a little bit and make a decision that's not necessarily impacted by that. And I think for Boch, he is going to be making a decision on, hey, do I want to come back or do I want to, am I done, right? Am I done managing, for good? Or do I still want to manage and maybe take some time? I don't know. I'm sure there's all sorts of things that he's thinking about. But, for a guy like that, I don't get the sense that he's going to – I mean, not that I think anyone expected this. This is not going to be a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, we're going to really draw this out situation. I think that you'll get a decision in relatively short order. And I think, that Boch is an incredible – I mean, he like I said, he's been around the block, but I think he also understands that there are a lot of decisions that will be impacted by his decision, whether guys, are going to be coming back or whether they're, not going to be given the opportunity to come back or, just the domino effect. So I can't imagine it will be too long after the season, relatively speaking.
Jared, I was surprised how hard Wolchuk went after Jacob DeGrom yesterday. I don't know what you thought about his start the other night, maybe the biggest start in his Rangers career, and he didn't, do enough to give you the best chance to win.
Yeah, Zach sent me the clip last night. I listened to it late, and I thought you guys all, I heard, all the various perspectives. I thought you guys all had
really good points. I was actually talking to Bastic about it earlier. Gavin, you know, you were talking about maybe giving him more rest along the way, which, yeah, I mean, you know, if for a guy who, you know, hasn't pitched, you know, this much, you know, the last 3 years combined, basically, you know, to basically go wire to wire in the rotation, you know, with the exception of that one, you know, skip start in Kansas City, it makes sense if maybe he's, you know, not at full energy or where he would normally be, you know, if he had done this last year. But then I think Eric responded by saying, well, yeah, easy to say that, but, you know, they were kind of playing from behind all year, right? After starting 8-2, they went on a bad run, and now they're playing catch up, and he was pitching really well. So, you know, it's easy for us to say that, but, you know, it's hey, he's looking good, he's pitching well. Hey, we need this guy, right? We're not scoring runs, we need this guy. So, you know, I thought Eric's point was great there. And then I you know, I think what Zach said is also spot on, in that, you know, if this was the Cowboys equivalent, you know, yeah, there'd be different chatter, and you know, maybe it'd be analyzed in a different way. I think, you know, the counter to what Zach said, if White Langford catches the fly ball off of Jeremy Payton's bat on the top of the first inning, the Astros likely don't score, and maybe it's a different conversation. But there's no doubt that, you know, in a very big game, I think Jacob would be the first to tell you that, nah, you know, that, hey, that wasn't my very best, and I'm sure he's bummed by that. But, you know, so I think you guys all had valid points. I think it's an interesting discussion. I think taking a step back, the Rangers season, let's just say that they don't make this great run and they don't get in the playoffs, and we kind of look at that Astros series as the, you know, the nail in the coffin. This season, you know, wasn't lost that series. It was lost in April and May, right, and early June, when they just weren't, you know, they were not scoring runs at all, and they weren't taking advantage of great pitching. And that's the shame of it, right? Because they had this elite ability to prevent runs that usually is, and also, you know, the defense as well. I mean, they had these elements of the team that were like not just playoff caliber, but, you know, make a deep run in October type of level, and they just couldn't score enough runs. And maybe, you know, I said this before with the bullpen and all the different elements, maybe they score more runs maybe than, you know, what Eric said doesn't become the reality. And what Gavin said is the reality. You have the ability to maybe skip a start here or there, and, you know, the whole thing, you know, just the domino effect of all of that. I do think this has been an incredibly successful year for Jacob, and it gives me a lot of confidence what next year might look like. But, you know, unfortunately, the Rangers put themselves in a hole this, you know, this year. And despite how valiant the effort has been here to climb back in, you know, unless they go on this great run, they're going to come up short, and it's going to be the first half of the season that really kind of ultimately was prohibitive for them playing beyond 162.
Do you think his endurance will be better next year after 170 innings or whatever this year?
I do. And Gavin, the reason why, you know, I've read some really interesting articles on pitching over the last couple of years, because we've seen some pitchers who have thrived beyond what is typically considered your prime in terms of age for a typical athlete. But a part of the reason is a lot of those pitchers are pitchers who maybe didn't throw a ton of innings earlier in their career at points because of injury. So I think for Jacob, a guy who, you know, it's not like he's thrown 200 innings the last 10 years. I think there's, you know, I think there's a strong argument. Hey, he's got a fresh UCL. This is just going to be year two with that new UCL in 2026. And it's not like he's got 1,500 innings over the last, you know, 7 years. So maybe he is a little fresher. And this guy's like a freak athlete. I mean, this guy, I know we don't necessarily associate the importance of athleticism with pitching. I know people typically think of like the David Wellses and Bartolo Colons, but, you know, the best pitchers in baseball are usually incredible athletes because of their ability to repeat their mechanics over and over. And not that your dunking ability says anything about you, but this is a guy that when he was 5'7", his freshman year of high school, was dunking easily. He's that type of an athlete in terms of explosion and springiness. And so I just think that you pair the athleticism, which doesn't seem to have slipped at all, second year back. You know, it's like, Gavin, you know, we both love basketball. You haven't played pickup basketball in, you know, 6 months. I don't care what, you know, how good a shape you are in on the Peloton, running up and down the court for an hour and a half, you're going to be gassed. Well, now if you go play that game 2 days later, you're probably going to be a little better prepared. So I think that, you know, as long as he can stay healthy, I don't think he's at the age yet where he's running the risk of, you know, really starting to slow down. And I think, you know, in a weird way, the injuries here the last couple of years, give him a little extra life in terms of age and his ability to be super effective.
Pardon me, Sands. Just got something down the wrong pipe there.
What pipe? That's how I am when I play pickup basketball after not playing in 6 months.
And your cardio is holding up a lot better than mine because I'd be cooked in a minute and a half, not an hour and a half, buddy. But appreciate your insights. And that was really interesting what you just gave us on DeGrom there. So thank you for that. Have a good week, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds good, fellas. Take care.
He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter. We have Nick Harris, Star Telegram, coming up next here as we're broadcasting live from Pickler Universe in Carroll.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on the Fan. All right, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation on the Fan. We're live at Pickler Universe in Carrollton, where you can come play pickleball and enjoy some happy hour with Stella Artois. Kick off your weekend for a special Friday happy hour here, Pickler Universe, presented by Pace for Texas. Salute to Jared Sandler for joining us. He does that every Rangers game day, brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. And Nick Harris, Star Telegram, joining us now here on a Football Friday. Nick, how the heck are you?
Hey, doing fantastic. I appreciate you, fellas. I set my alarm this time around, so we're good to go.
Yeah, man. Excited to have you on, and great job breaking down who all was responsible for the 7 busted coverages on Twitter, actually, the other night that resulted in those big plays. What all went into that, and did you get any feedback of note on it?
Yeah, communication has been the big thing that's been coming out of this week, or at least out of that game on Sunday against the Giants, as you know, the key cog as toward what exactly happened on the back end during that game. And, you know, looking at those 7 plays, you can look at about 5 of them and you see miscommunication between safeties and outside corners. And asking Brian Schottenheimer today about that, you know, how has the process been this week and getting back up to speed on the communication side of things, he said, hey, it's fixed. We feel good going into Chicago. So we'll see how fixed it can be. You know, it's tough looking at those 7 plays and trying to believe that it can be a 1 week fix, but that's what Schottenheimer and Eberflus have been preaching all week, and I guess we'll see that on the field on Soldier Field on Sunday.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, how confident are you they can turn it around? Is this a reminder thing, or is this more like into who your personnel is and what they're good at?
You know, I've seen some busted coverages in the past where it's multiple guys out of place and it's just all over the field. And I could really only point to one play where it got that drastic in the game against the Giants. It was that 52-yard reception by Darius Slayton down the right sideline. You had Kyer Elam thinking it's playing cover 2. You had Malik Hooker and the rest of the defense playing cover 3. But then Malik Hooker bites on the play action and everybody is out of place, and it allows that 52-yard reception. And lucky that one didn't end up being a touchdown. So, you know, aside from that one play, the rest of the 7 busted coverages were more so one guy issues or one communication piece that didn't get translated in time. And so, you know, is that a 1 week fix? I don't know. You know, I've never been in an NFL secondary, believe it or not. But I think with what they could do this week and the time that they've had allowed, I think, you know, they have a good chance of being able to do it on Sunday. It's just, I don't know if I have a good pulse on if they actually can.
Did they mention, like, the new pieces and the crowd noise, maybe? Like, just they're not familiar enough that they can do hand signals or a head nod?
That's been the biggest thing that's been communicated this week, was that the crowd at AT&T Stadium was loud, and that they were having to communicate downfield and they weren't getting calls in downfield whenever that crowd noise was really starting to ramp up. You rarely hear the home crowd noise be an issue, but that is very much a reality for, you know, defense. And so, you know, they are hoping to be a little bit more cognizant of that, not only this week, but next week against the Packers. That's going to be another crazy home crowd. But, you know, we're going to get another look at it this week.
So what are you thinking about this edge group, Nick? I know you were, I mean, Donovan Ezeraki was your guy on the draft show. I think we all liked him, but he was definitely your favorite, I think, amongst the group. We got numbers on him compared to the rest of the draft class. I think he's second in pressures to Abdul Carter. Is it just, hey, he needs to play? I mean, what stood out to you from him at Boston College to the version of Donovan Ezeraki we're seeing now through 2 weeks and the rest of that edge room?
Yeah, what stood out to me at Boston College was the athleticism. I mean, the bend, the freaky nature that he has getting around the edge. It's one of a kind. It's why I had a first-round grade on him on the draft show. But, you know, what we've seen here is him trying to really refine his game and add more pass rush tools to his arsenal. You know, he's been this speed, athletic, around-the-edge type guy. And we saw during training camp in the preseason him trying to work on speed to power. You know, that was what made Micah Parsons so much money in his rookie season, was being able to use that speed and turn it into power and get to the quarterback for double-digit sacks for, you know, 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row, excuse me. And, you know, Donovan Ezeraki was trying to add that type of layer to his game. And, you know, it's going to be a work in progress, especially with a rookie. And, you know, the pressures have certainly been there, but you could tell that he's eager to finally get to the quarterback and bring him down. It's been a little tough for these defensive ends to do so far. And it's a little bit of a surprise because they have Kenny Clark and Osa Digizua, who have done a good job pushing the pocket up and allowing them a little bit more depth to be able to get around the edge and create some more opportunities. But that just hasn't been there yet.
Hey, Nick, you're in a situation this week where you could probably run the football and be effective, or you could throw the football and be really effective. What's your best path for Dallas Cowboys offense to get things done this week?
Hey, Brian, if you could explain that one more time, I think I lost you a little bit.
The Cowboys are going to have an opportunity this week with the way the Giants play defense, their run defense. Maybe they're going to have some good opportunities, especially off the edge. Their secondary kind of gets a little bit compromised because of all the injuries they're at. What's your best path for making sure that Dallas has some offense this weekend?
Yeah, if I heard you correctly, it's about if there's opportunities in the run game for Javonte Williams. And, I think there definitely could be some there. I'm curious to see how the weather affects this game, though, and if there's going to be just as many opportunities in the run game to where, you know, they see light boxes. They're not taking against heavy boxes. Sure. You know, this secondary is so beat up in Chicago. There's going to be so many opportunities in the pass game, but you just hope the weather doesn't get in the way of that. But, you know, Javonte Williams, and, you know, there's going to have to be some sort of, you know, manufacturing of holes within the middle of that offensive line now that Cooper Beebe is out of the equation. I love Brock Hoffman as a pass protector. I think as a run game defender, he's going to need to get some combo blocks with Tyler Booker and Tyler Smith to really find sustainable success, especially against this talented defensive interior with Brady Jarrett and Montez Sweat. But I think they could scheme up some things to find some room on the edges and be able to crack into that secondary and attack some of these backup defensive backs.
What about the Clowney situation and how he's, I mean, what has he really been doing from a practice standpoint? And Steven was saying maybe a game time decision whether or not he's going to play this week.
Yeah, it's kind of a day-by-day thing, like you said. They said he had a good day of practice yesterday on Thursday, and, you know, with the way the team played on Sunday and how many more extra snaps they took on Sunday, they held a walkthrough practice on Wednesday, so they haven't really been able to see him on the field other than yesterday and today. So very much a day-by-day thing. You know, Stephen Jones coming on with you guys after practice, that was big to get that, after-action report, if you will, about his practice environment. And it is going to be very much a game-time decision on if he goes and how many snaps he actually plays.
All right, Nick, why do you feel so good about the Cowboys on Sunday? Because I'm picking them to win too, but there's something about the Bears that do make me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, with the way this pass offense has been able to play in the first 2 weeks with Dak Prescott and these weapons, you pair that with all of the holes that the Bears have in the secondary, not only when everybody is healthy, but now that they have two starting defensive backs out in Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon, and then you add into the mix TJ Edwards, their linebacker, I just think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for this pass game to just build on what they started in week 1 and week 2. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you know, I feel pretty good about what the Cowboys can do in stopping the Chicago run. You know, I don't feel like they have a run game that scares you coming into this one. You know, DeAndre Swift, he misses a lot of open holes between the tackles. And I feel like there's going to be really good opportunities for these edges to get active in the run game. You hope it's a game you see Jadeveon Clowney, because I think his run game prowess would be on display. But even if it's not, Marshawn Nealon has proven here in the first that he could. I just feel good about what the Cowboys can do from keeping Chicago's offense.
There he goes. Nick Harris, Star Telegram with you here in the G-Bag Nation. If you can hear me, sir, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, buddy.
I think you just started to break up a little bit on your end, but he's confident in Cowboys' victory and what this offense can do. I think the only way it gets away from you is if Caleb Williams is able to make deep throws, you know, similar to what Russell Wilson did, and a fair amount of anxiety, I think, on that is fair. It is interesting how much the line has moved from the Bears' one-point favorite to now Cowboys' one-and-a-half-point favorites. I think the betting public, maybe even wise guys, are confident in victory, and maybe, hopefully, an overreaction to how bad the pass defense was. I mean, they did a hell of a job against Jalen Hurts and the Super Bowl champs.
They did.
Right?
They
have two data points here so far when it comes to complete games.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting game for all of us. Like, is it as bad as it was last week, or can they find a way to fool Caleb Williams? And I would like to think that this does mean a lot to Flus, and he's got something cooked up for Caleb Williams. He was with him for a year. There's a lot that came out about his tenure there in Chicago and what he didn't do and the Caleb Williams, the tape stuff and all this and all that. I'd like to think that he's going to come out with a game plan to put the players in a better chance to succeed than what we saw a week ago. But if he doesn't, then it's going to open up a whole other layer of criticism. And the other thing is the Bears' injury report on defense, they're missing a lot of key players.
Their
two best corners are out, which speaks to the strength of the Cowboys right now, which is CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. So take advantage of that weakness and absolutely crush the Bears' secondary is what I'm hoping happens.
Yeah, what happens when Caleb Williams realizes the play that has been called and designed isn't going to work? He's going to pull that thing down and try to escape. Are Cowboys defenders there to wrap him up? If they are, you will win this game easily. But if he can get loose and improvise your toes.
This could be a very frustrating game when it comes to third down and him just taking off and running.
You're spot on about
that. Where, like, it's every play you're going, damn it, you know, where's the spy? And you wonder, the adjustments are really, do you have somebody that can spy him that you didn't spy in week one to try and do some things? And are you willing to play more single high, which he has problems with? If he doesn't spy and he plays too deep, then you kind of know that they're over there just not really looking at film.
It is the G-Bag Nation Live Pickler Universe here on The Fan. We're coming back, and we'll have the Hall of Fame announcer of your Texas Rangers, Eric Nadell, on with us here.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The nation. Yes, sir. These Rangers have got us on our knees praying for a miracle here as we broadcast live from Pickler Universe on a proper Football Friday. We're talking Cowboys and Bears with you, but also just three series left for your Texas Rangers, including tonight, 6:30 pregame with the Marlins in town. Eric Nadell Show brought to you by Anheuser-Busch and PlayScore. And a good afternoon, Eric. How the heck are you?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Man, we're doing good. Of course, hoping for a miracle. What's the best comeback to make a playoff you've ever seen or covered? What's your favorite one in your baseball life?
Well, my least favorite one was in 1951 when the Giants came from, I think it was 14 and a half games back, and caught the Dodgers and then won with the Bobby Thompson shot heard around the world. And that's that whole race was, you know, even more famous than it otherwise would have been because of the Giants sign stealing. And there's a whole book that was written about it that's really good that people might want to read. It's called The Echoing Green. It's about all of the people who were involved in the stealing of the signs at the Polo Grounds, including the electrician who actually rigged up the system where they were able to flash lights from the home clubhouse to somebody on the infield a million miles away because the clubhouses were about 500 feet out in the center field in the Polo Grounds. But that's probably the best known and one of the greatest comebacks. The Yankees had a real good one catching the Red Sox in 1978 on the Bucky effing Dent home run. And then you had the Mariners and the Angels in a real good one too. And I think it was 95 where the Angels blew a big lead, over 10-game lead. But as far as something this short, probably the collapse of the Phillies
64.
In 1964.
Yeah.
That would be the one where they had, a 6.5-game lead with 12 to play and managed to lose.
Yep.
So the electrician in the Giants won the pennant was changing a light that was up on the scoreboard or something? How'd that one go?
No, they actually had somebody in the clubhouse who was flashing somebody in the bullpen, and then the guy in the bullpen was relaying it to somebody in the dugout, and somehow it was happening fast enough that the batter knew what was coming. And Bobby Thompson's home run, Bobby Thompson claimed, was not affected by sign stealing. But a lot of the Giants' victories were as they came from behind that year.
I mean, how prevalent is that throughout the history of baseball, Eric? How many have been caught, and how many do you just suspect?
Well, that's the most famous one where it wasn't caught till long afterwards. But there have been all kinds of instances over the years. The Chicago was always accused because of the pyrotechnics in the scoreboard in the White Sox games. Those have always been interesting for me. But probably a lot more has gone on than has ever been caught because baseball has a long history of that. And, of course, there's nothing illegal about it if the players on the field are doing it. You know, a guy relaying a sign from second base or a third base coach managing to see the grip of a pitcher, that sort of thing. But when you do it electronically, that's where you run into trouble.
What was the Rangers' comeback against Houston? Was that 2015 where they were down 10 or 9 or something like that?
2015, yeah, much earlier in the season.
Yeah,
that was Jeff Banister's first year where the Rangers got off to the terrible start, and he kind of coined the never-ever-quit thing.
Yeah.
And the Rangers came from far back. But, you know, nothing like it is now. I mean, the Rangers need to go 9-0. And then hope that the Red Sox and the Guardians both collapse, you know, or the Astros or Mariners. And, you know, it's basically not going to happen. You know, even if the Rangers go 9-0, the chances right now of them getting a playoff spot are not that great. You know, for a while we thought maybe 86 wins would win a postseason spot. Well, that's not going to do it. And 88 wins might not even do it.
Wow.
As many teams as there are involved in it, and teams that are playing well right now, not teams that are in the process of cratering.
So what are you hoping to see here in these final nine? Just fun?
Well, I'd like to see the Rangers finish well. I'd like to see them finish with, you know, 86 wins or more, which would at least defy the Vegas over-under. I believe the Rangers over-under at the start of the year was 85.5. So just from the standpoint of overachieving what people expected of the club, I think winning 86 games would be nice. For the Rangers to do that, they'd need to go 7-2.
Hey, Eric, I mean, I know the season's not over and all that, but if Eric Nadell was to write a book about the season, what would the first chapter of the book be?
Oh, it'd be all about the inability of the Rangers to score over the first 4 months of the season, and would probably try to delve into why. And I'm not, I have no idea what the answer is.
Sure.
But somehow get into that. You know, remember the Rangers hired Brett Boone about a month into the season. And it looked after a few months as if there were some very positive results. And maybe there have been more than seems evident now that the Rangers appear to be a lost cause. But, you know, why for the second straight year have the majority of Ranger players underperformed offensively? You know, I don't know that there always is an answer to why.
Right.
But, you know, I'd be curious, and I'd be getting a whole lot of people's opinions on that.
Eric, you've been around this team for a long time. Big deal or not, the reports from Jeff Wilson about the club and the teammates not really wanting to hang out outside of work, I guess is really the best way to put it.
First of all, I don't know if it's true. And second of all, I don't think it's a big deal at all. I think that kind of stuff gets overemphasized, exaggerated. You know, there have been lots of teams over the years that have won despite not really liking each other. You know, the Bronx Zoo Yankees in the late 70s were a good example of that. The A's, when they won their three straight titles in the 70s, were a bunch of guys who, you know, to a large extent didn't like each other. You know, the chemistry thing is nice, but, you know, I don't think it's a reason that the Rangers have underperformed.
Hey, Eric, I chalked it up to the fact that when you guys go on the road, you basically, and I know the players and the broadcasters and all that are separate, but as the players, they're like on the road together the whole time. Buses, clubhouse, flights. You know, is there real reasons to have more interaction with each other when you're already kind of doing a lot of things, you know, for maybe 2 weeks at a time, a week at a time?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I think that's something that contributed in 2023 to the success of the Rangers in the playoffs, having to win all those road games, you know, and doing so. But the interesting thing about the Rangers on the road this year, and everybody seems to be missing this point, is the Rangers have actually scored more runs on the road than the league average.
Yeah.
It's their pitching on the road that hasn't been outstanding. Their pitching on the road has been just average, whereas their pitching at home has been elite, by far the best in the major leagues. That's the difference between the Rangers home and road this year, although everybody seems to be under the impression that the Ranger hitters don't hit on the road. That's not the case. The Rangers are averaging, you know, over 4.5 runs a game on the road. You know, at home, they're averaging down closer to 4 runs a game. And that's where the problems lie.
What do you think about the math on the exit velo and the launch angle and stuff, the hits at the globe falling like 8 feet shorter than they were when it first opened? How much has it changed into being more of a pitcher-friendly park since it opened?
Well, you know, that first year it opened when we played without fans, you know, we were under the impression this was an extreme pitcher's park. You know, we were constantly saying, well, that would have been a home run across the street. That would have been a home run across the street. It seemed like there were two or three every game like that. Hmm. You know, even the very first game at the Globe, people forget, was a 1-0 game. And that was an eye-opener right then and there. Then, you know, once we started having fans in the building, it became not a hitter's park, but at least a neutral park. And then for some reason this year, and who knows what it is, you know, it's become an extreme pitcher's park. The ball hasn't carried that well. And I don't know that anybody has any idea why. But, you know, it certainly is one of the factors in explaining why the Rangers' ERA is so much lower at home than it is on the road.
Well, thank you, Eric. Have a nice weekend. We'll catch up with you one final time for this 2025 season, probably, most likely, 99.9% chance next Friday. Till then, what you drinking and what you thinking, buddy?
I've been drinking iced green tea today. You know, I love the green tea at Flower Child. They have really good iced green tea. And what I'm thinking is the Rangers have a day off on Thursday, and there's a fantastic concert at the Bomb Factory. One of my favorite bands, Haim, H-A-I-M, which is three sisters from Los Angeles doing incredible harmonies and really writing some great music. They're at the Bomb Factory on Thursday, and I urge music fans to get out and see them. You won't be disappointed.
Well, thank you, sir. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you the next week.
Thanks, guys. Let's go for the miracle.
Let's go.
Eric Nadel brought to you by Anheuser-Busch and by PlayScore, and it is time now with that for that one segment of the week you're encouraged to call in while intoxicated. It's What You Drinking and What You Thinking next year on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.